Hey, I'm Liam O'Donnell.
And my name is Joshua Alvarez.
And we are Cinepunks.
Cinepunks, episode 7.
Episode 7.
So we just had our launch last
May 4th. Yeah.
Which was this past Sunday.
Yeah.
And I thought it was funny because it was both Star Wars Day and Jawbreaker Day, which is why I felt like,
right,
as Cinepunks, that's both aspects our entity.
I mean, I think this is probably endemic of who we are in that you could probably say launching on May 4th when the internet is filled with Star Wars memes and on a Sunday, which is just notoriously
a poor idea.
The film website I write for, we don't publish anything on Sundays because no one goes to the website on Sundays.
Because Jesus slept on Sunday.
I guess. I don't know.
That's what it was.
Yeah. No, he didn't sleep on Sunday.
He rested. Right.
All I know is that it was probably not the most hype day to do our thing, but the joke of doing it on May the 4th
is amazing.
And to be clear, there's Jawbreaker Day, there's Star Wars. I want to add the
third
part of the Trinity.
May the 4th?
That's when MCA passed away.
Oh, MCA.
It should be MCA Day. I will.
Right.
Let us start hashtag MCA Day. Let us start the movement.
MCA Day.
We will start the movement ourselves.
Hey, man. Yeah. Got to keep moving.
Yeah.
MCA taught me anything.
We shouldn't be laughing, but
I know
it's
funny. I know it's true.
So,
man, that's two respects to the dead that we've done since Cinepunks has come.
I know. Well, I think we're at that age where many of our heroes are going to start passing away. I mean, not that MCA didn't pass away too young, but now is about when people would pass away too young.
That's such a terrifying thing to think about.
I mean, it really is.
Yeah, but that's
what
it is. Don't
get me wrong. Some of these dudes are going to be around forever, you know. Well, my guess is Adam Yauch is going to be alive till, like, we're contemplating our own deaths, and he's on TV like, I'm the old man.
Check me out with my funny style.
I'm still alive. Can you believe it? You know, things like that. But, So I think the first thing to say is thank you to all the people who checked out the podcast.
Thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts.
To those of you who promoted us, you know, we went out of our way to invite people to post about us. And some people forgot, which is that'll happen. But a lot of people who I don't even know that well. Like some of my best friends didn't post anything. Mm. But meanwhile, people who I don't know that well, who I know only over the internet, went out of their way
to post about us,
to promote us. So
that was pretty
cool, thank you so much. And that's not over. I mean, we really wanted to hype that one day just because that was the launch day. But you can tell your friends about us anytime.
You can tell your friends about us anytime. We also have a lot of fun stuff coming up that you're going to want to tell your friends about.
It's true.
Or
it's true.
You're going to not want to tell your friends about, so you can be like, yo, I was down with this before you got here.
Yeah, that's very true.
So,
I was down
with Cinepunks when they were cool.
Now that we've launched, though, we do have to acknowledge a few things. I felt like the first step would be we actually have an audience now, and an audience is a responsive group of people, so
it's
they
nice.
Wanted to think.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah, yeah. So, but there's also, they call you out on stuff.
Yeah.
So the first thing I wanted to say is that my mom listened to the podcast.
Oh, no.
And she wanted you to know that Donna Reese had brown hair and brown eyes.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Wow. You were Sue Storm, the Donna Reed type.
Wow.
My mom was like, she gets what you mean.
Right.
All American, whatever, but
right.
not blonde hair, blue
not
eyes.
Not blonde
hair,
blue
brown
eye.
Hair, brown eyes.
Okay. Well, I
leave
apologize.
It to my mother to notice that.
Mea culpa to Liam's mom. So, yeah.
Wow. And I also wanted to assert.
Also, to be fair, though, there were black and white shows that I've seen them on TV Land. I've never actually seen Donna Reed in color.
But can't you tell a blonde hair person
tell.
In black and white?
I cannot tell. Can you tell? That's a thing you can tell?
Yeah, I think blonde hair you can. I think past that, it would be difficult.
Past that, like the subtle nuances between brown and dark brown. And
I mean, whites all look similar anyway.
It's
oh, my
true.
God!
Liam said it. I thought it, though. I thought it right before you said
inappropriate.
It.
Inappropriate. Inappropriate.
Yet wholly accurate.
Inappropriate.
But, hey, what are you going to do, man? I love white people.
We just lost so many listeners.
I love white people. Straight
up. They're fine.
Yeah, I know. It's cool. My wife is half Greek. So
yeah. Greek and Vietnamese.
Greek and Vietnamese. So
yeah.
You know, there you go.
Yeah. That's actually a restaurant we should start.
Meilani's parents actually used to own a restaurant called Meilani International. And they only serve Vietnamese food. Yeah, it's pretty funny. They have a huge wooden sign that's like 20 feet long or something like that.
Wow.
And I've been trying to get them to bring it here because I think it'd be amazing. If we hung up a sign in my house that said Meilani's International, Just my thought.
Especially if she didn't know. Yeah, she just came home one day and there's this 20-foot sign. Oh, man.
Intense, man. Intense.
So other things I wanted to acknowledge, you know, people listen. A lot of people listen to the show. They really liked it. There was, you know, people pointed out that when we name the episodes, we name them all just demo. And so we will be naming them after topics from now on, just so you guys know what the hell it is. They had little descriptions, but when you posted, it just didn't say.
It just said demo episode five.
And then also, I don't know that he listened to it, but other people pointed out, so I just want to reassert yet again, I really like that Holy Mountain Printing guy. And I may not appreciate the record label he used to run, but I have like 7 of your shirts, so don't think I'm a hater.
That's pretty amazing.
I mean, it's fine. I think I was nice enough about it, but I just wanted to reiterate that, you know, since he's the one dude, I feel like I was like, oh yeah, his label sucks. Why did I even say that? It's like on the internet now. Like 150 people heard me say it at this point.
Totally real. Yeah. It exists now and you can't take it back.
No nope.
Bullets and words, baby. The two things you can't take back.
No, that's true. Right? So, like I said, it hasn't been huge, but it's been a surprising response, and we're hoping that as it grows and people talk about it, more people will hear it.
It gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
and we're trying to do more things. Like, we're going to have more interviews coming on.
Yeah.
And we're going to have more, you know.
Do we say who we're interviewing next week? That's not a big giveaway, right?
I guess not. We didn't say, did we? Next
we
kind
of said on Dan's thing. We kind
of
said.
Oh, we kind of did, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this not this coming Saturday, but next Saturday. So ostensibly, the next episode of Cinepunks.
Yeah.
Will be our interview with Mr. Jason Shevchuk of Kid Dynamite and No More Black Fame and Bound.
More importantly, Bound.
Yes, of Spiritfall Records, New Brunswick, New Jersey.
What?
What's up? Holla. So.
Can I be honest? So I've seen Kid Dynamite. I think I've gone to almost every Kid Dynamite show in Philadelphia.
Nice.
The exception being didn't they do a second reunion that was 2 shows?
They did. The second reunion was, it was 2 shows.
Right.
With, I think you missed the secret shows, like the ones at Jeff's house and stuff.
Right. So I didn't go to the secret shows, and I only went to one of the two of the second. The first reunion, I went to both shows.
Yeah,
so I
was like,
I'm going. And I didn't go to their first show ever, which I hear in Philly. One, yeah. Was that with Better Than 1,000? Is
that
right?
At the YWCA on Catherine Street, put on by Mr. Robbie Redcheeks.
Yeah. Other than that, I've seen Kid Dynamite every time they played and twice in Baltimore. So they're a band that I cared about a lot. And so I'm excited to talk to him. I hope I don't act like a nerd. But I never saw Bound. And I got to be honest, I also like Bound.
I love Bound. Bound is so awesome.
It's so weird because I think a lot of people who like Kid Dynamite don't go back and buy the Bound CD. I don't know if that's as popular.
Well, it's funny too because that Bound CD, the one that came out on Spiritfall, had the Police cover and all that stuff.
Yeah, totally.
But the demo before that was intense. It was so crazy.
Really?
It was so, so, so good. I mean, not that that record was bad, but the demo was insane. It was fucking bananas.
I have not heard it.
My brother still has it, I believe, somewhere. It's like a red tape, so he has it somewhere. If I can find it, I will definitely listen to it for you. I will give it to you and let you listen to it.
Great.
But yeah, so we got that coming up, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah. A few notes, too, on the program itself. If you know someone or you think you are someone who would like to be on the show, hit us up. I've had a few people since we launched be like, oh, I'd like to be on the show.
Yeah.
And they were actually people we were already thinking of. We just hadn't asked them yet, so that's great. But if you can think of someone, we love for people to respond to any of the shows. If we say something that, you know, you think we were too hard on Seventh Dagger Records.
Or doesn't sit well with you, if you really, really enjoy Joe's Apartment or one of the movies that we slagged on pretty
Joe's
hard.
Apartment.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
More than welcome to reach out and let us know.
And here's the thing, too. Like, we obviously we're doing this for free. We don't have any ads right now. We're not even a thing where we can have you pay us anything. But, you know, we could operate on a barter system because we're that punk rock. So if you run a thing and you want us to talk about your thing, at this point, I think we would trade promotion for promotion. If you're going to talk about us, we'll talk about you. We don't need any We don't need any free stuff because we're not that awesome.
I also want to put it out there that we're not just going for people with high-profile positions in any scene. Evo's going to be a guest on this show.
Oh, yeah. This is a conversation with friends. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, some of the people that first occurred to us, people, so I don't think I'm giving anything away that one of the people I talked to was Joe Gervasi from Exhumed. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of stuff. Loud Fast Philly is really cool. Exhumed helped form us as horror fans. So that's like a huge that's a huge get, and you know, whatever. I don't mind that. But like Evan Villela, awesome, you know, our dude. Friend
made us our flyer. Flyer ever.
He put the flyer together if you saw it. He does flyers for events all around the country. And
he went with you to X Fest, didn't he?
He did go to X Fest. We should have had him on today to talk about X Fest.
That would have been a good idea. But you know what though? We're hitting a rhythm.
Yeah, we
don't know what we're doing.
So yeah, and that's the last thing is that thank you for listening, and also apologies. And this not that we think we're doing a bad job, but
we literally have no idea what we're doing.
Yeah, we're figuring out sound stuff. It takes us like an hour to set up this thing record.
It's tragic how long it takes us sometimes, but it's cool though because whatever, you know what I mean.
Yeah, we're punk rock.
Yeah,
man.
Dude, you're not getting anything mixed down. Fuck a mixing down. You know what
I don't even know how to do
that. Yeah, it's a thing. It's the limitations of our handle on GarageBand. So.
I mean, to be fair, this is also ridiculous because Josh has this GarageBand, and this is the real garage. This is no booty.
No, it's not a bootleg.
This is
it
the
might
real.
Be a little bit old. I will say
that's
that.
Fair, but it's the real thing.
Yeah.
So what happens is we're recording this, but then we don't know what to do with it, and all the intro music is on my computer. So Josh sends it to me, and then I put it in the free ass whatever that thing is that I got for PC.
Audible, that one? Or
no, what's it
audio
called?
Something?
Yeah, it's something. It's free.
Know. Yeah.
Audacity. It's free. I put it in Audacity. I just attach these intro music that we got off of YouTube. So they sound bad.
Yeah.
And then I just hit a button that just says normalize. Which I assume does a good thing, I assume.
Yeah, so if you are somebody out there who can help us with this, feel free to reach
out.
Yo,
we will trade you a t-shirt.
Word.
Straight up. If you will be our sound engineer.
They're beautiful t-shirts printed by the great dudes at Awesome Dudes Printing.
Big ups to Awesome Dudes Printing.
Big ups to my man Lee and my man Pink Bike Ralph.
Yeah.
So those dudes are awesome. Thank you for the awesome t-shirts.
That's true.
And Yeah. If you did want to reach out to us, you could hit us up at cinepunks@gmail.com.
That's true.
That's CINEPUNX at symbol gmail.com.
We also are on the Facebook, again, Cinepunks, the Twitter, at Cinepunks.
Man.
Yeah, we're a thing. We're
it's
a real
happening.
Thing.
It's totally happening. I'm into it. So,
I wanted to spend a little bit of time, you know, someone pointed out, they were really excited because they assumed we were going to do a whole X-Fest episode.
Uh-huh.
And I had to tell them that Josh couldn't go. Josh couldn't go to X-Fest, guys. He couldn't do it. So
I was working.
I think you were working.
Yeah.
The point is Josh couldn't go. So if you were like, oh, I can't wait to listen to the X-Fest episode, that's not going to happen. But I'll spend a little bit of time just talking about it myself. Then we'll talk. Then we'll spend some time just talking about other things that we've seen recently and whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then move on to our topic for the day.
Yeah. That's what we're planning to do.
Yeah.
And if you've made it this far through six episodes, you know that these plans are easily derailed.
Right. And you know, I think we're actually part of the thing with the show is we do want to get into some of the movies we love, some topics around film in a larger sense. So we might even tell you guys ahead of time, like, oh, next week we're going to be talking about this movie so that you could, like, watch the movie and you'll be able to listen to the podcast as we talk about the movie. Know that if, let's say we have a podcast and we're going to be talking about Willow.
Great movie.
I love Willow.
Mad
or
Mardigan.
Demons or Vanishing Waves, whatever it is. We're going to be talking about a movie. And then you plug in that podcast and you're so stoked for that conversation. There might be, like, half an hour of us talking about, like, stage moshing and how bad it is before we even get to the movie. So,
which is fine.
Just be patient.
It's the organic flavor of what we're doing here.
I know. Well, you know, my friend Ed, who I love, was like, maybe you guys should do like headings. Like on other podcasts, they'll have like, this is this section, and then there's intro music for the section. Yeah. And on one hand, I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But then I kind of thought about it and like, we wouldn't even keep to it anyway. Like someone would go to that heading and we'd be talking about cauliflower or something.
They'd have to be written after we do the episodes.
Right.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is fine. But anyway, let's get on to X.
Okay. So, for those of you who don't know, the Exhumed Film Society, we've talked about it a few times. It's an organization here in Philadelphia for friends who put on these all film, specifically 35mm or 16mm events.
And they've been doing it forever. Like, we've followed them from when they were
17 years now, maybe?
They were at the Hardwin in Mount Ephraim. They were at the one weird movie theater, the Hoyts.
The Hoyts. I think it's a farm supply store
Yeah,
now.
That got
Garden
like,
supply, something like that.
Totally tragic end to that theater.
Yeah.
And then they were at they're at the International House now. There are a couple
They had another
place
in Philly somewhere, and I don't remember where.
I have no idea.
I didn't go. So, like, we went, I don't know about your experience. My experience is I went as a kid a bunch, and then I stopped going for a while because I was moving around myself. I wasn't even in Philadelphia
for
a while.
You were in, like, Princeton and all that?
Yeah, Norfolk and whatever. And then when I moved back to the city, I slowly started going to some of their stuff. They weren't having as much stuff, but they did have the Horrorthon. Mm-hmm. So 2 years in a row, I tried to go, and it sold out before I got tickets. And then I got to go, and I've been going to the Horrorthon now for, I guess, 4 years. I think this is
the last Horrorthon.
This will be my fifth year.
This past October, when I met you there, I popped both of my bicycle tires on the way. And then when I got to the theater with the movie already in progress, I sat on the 3-pound bag of Smart Food popcorn on my chair.
Oh, and it
which
exploded.
Then exploded all over the floor. It was great. It was a day of explosions for me.
That's fair. That's fair.
Unbelievably a bad day.
Think.
I still had fun though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so just to give you guys an idea, for those of you who don't know, Exhumed has been doing this Horrorthon for a long time.
Yeah, it's a 24-hour horror movie marathon.
Yeah.
I went to the very first one, and the very first movie that they showed was Halloween, and I think I cheered when I saw the pumpkin show up on the screen. Like,
yeah, of course.
The first, yeah, I was so amped up. Me and Eva.
But so this year was the fourth year of them doing another fest, only 12 hours, called X-Fest. And the idea is,
that it's only 12 hours.
Yeah, only 12. The thing about Exhumed is that they've focused a lot in the past on horror, with good reason. I mean, that was their love or whatever. But, you know, Harry, who is the guy who collects a lot of the film prints and really helps it happen, or makes it happen, rather, and the other folks are kind of helping him some, he collects other stuff. He doesn't just collect horror prints. So Western, sci-fi, exploitation-y action stuff, kung fu. He's got all these prints, and he can trade for other stuff if they want to show other stuff.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to only do horror for them. So X-Fest, I went to the first one 4 years ago, and it was
It blew great. Your mind.
Yeah, yeah. And it's always been... And each year it's been awesome in my mind.
Yeah.
Some years are a little more rapey than others. I mean, these are exploitation films.
That
so,
is tough, though.
Yeah, occasionally there's a movie and you're like, oh, God, really? And don't get me wrong, like, there's only been a couple movies where I was like, fuck this movie. Like,
yeah,
just
like
not
thoroughly unwatchable.
Yeah, for the most part, they've been pretty good. But I will say this. So I went this year. It was my fourth year. I was really excited. I'll have a full write-up on synapse.co. It's late. I tried to get it done yesterday. It didn't happen for me. So I'll, you know, and this might even go up before that goes up, but who knows? For X-Fest, it's 12 hours. And this year, I would say there were no movies that I felt, though there was a significant chunk of gross stuff to some extent.
Yeah.
There was no movies this year that I was like, oh man, fuck this movie. Like, so.
I heard that they showed Coonskin.
They did show Coonskin.
The Ralph Bakshi movie.
That was actually the hardest movie for me, and it's only in retrospect that I think, like, oh, that was awesome.
Yeah.
In the moment, I think I responded probably the way that a lot of people at the time responded who didn't give the movie a chance.
Yeah.
It's just, look at these race caricatures that this dumbass white man drew.
But
I'm
dude.
So offended. But I think for both me and, you know, I was there with my wife, Susan.
Yeah.
We felt that way, but then we didn't. Because if you look past the caricatures to what's going on, clearly there's more there. It's actually a very empowering tale. It's honestly, it has the plot that every blaxploitation movie ever has of, you know,
it's
the white folks trying.
It's a response to that Disney movie.
Yeah, and so that was the thing I didn't know.
Song of the South.
I really think if you have seen Song of the South,
which
and then you see Coonskin,
it
really makes Coonskin that much more powerful. Because it's Song of the South still, I mean, when Coonskin came out, it hadn't yet been totally banned, right? Like, people had seen it.
People had seen
it. Was out there. So it was a powerful satire of it. And it's, you know, when you read about Coonskin, you see, like, CORE. I forget the name, what that's an acronym for. It was one of those, you know, they protested it was against it. Meanwhile, NAACP endorsed it, said it was a powerful satire. Like,
yeah.
So I think it's worth keeping in mind that, you know, Bashky's not an idiot.
No.
And he did this, and I think it helped that I knew who he was.
Yeah.
If I had seen this...
You've seen Wizards and all his other stuff as well.
I have seen Wizards. I've seen Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. I've not seen Fritz the Cat yet.
Fritz the Cat's intense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. It's one of those movies that's like, at the time, it was really like pushing boundaries and all that stuff. But as it ages, it's like, you know, like the shock of shock movie is kind of, you know, it's exponentially expanded so much now that watching that, you're just like, oh, yeah, I get it. And I understand, but it's kind of.
I will say this. A lot of the people who I saw it with had seen it before or were familiar with it. And so for them, they weren't even. Nothing even rubbed them the wrong way. They were totally prepped to be like, this is a movie that is dealing with this subject, whatever. I went in totally blind, so it was hard for me.
So you had no idea.
I had no idea what it was. I didn't know anything. I just knew the name.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh, this is the Wizard. And, you know, I was like, that sounds like the name of the guy who did Wizards, and then the animation style, obviously. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, Wizards. So I went in, like, you know, pretty clear. And, like, for me, my first response really was, like, okay, I know what this guy's going for, but does this work? And it was only thinking about it for a while that I felt like, okay, I think it does work. I think what's hard is there's a couple of parts with a character voiced by Scatman
Carruthers from The
that
Shining.
You could say is like Banjo Man,
mm.
N-word Man, whatever. He does a little like comedic things in between, whatever. That was the one point when he was on screen that consistently I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's sort of the point. Like, I don't think.
It's not supposed to be non-confrontational.
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly.
It's
so,
thoroughly designed. I mean, have you seen Song of the South?
I have not. So that's the thing. I am completely unfamiliar with Song of the South.
Oh, wow.
Every
you know the song,
form.
Though, from there, that zippity doo da, zippity yeah. That's from there. It was. That was like one of the most racist things in American cinema history.
Right.
Like, from such a huge corporate. From Disney.
Yeah.
That when that movie went up for its awards at the end of that year, they didn't allow the guy who played Uncle Remus into the Oscars for it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of racism. Like, fucking crazy racism.
So
there you go.
We're a little off track as far as the order, but I'm glad. Rather than just go through and talk about every movie, I'll just talk about the highlights. So yeah. Coonskin, though it was really hard, was a highlight, but I think that's good that it was really hard. In other words, when you're at an exploitation fest, if everything was just like a mindless orgy of sex and violence,
yeah,
and you never stop to be like, oh fuck, what's going on with this movie, it's not that interesting.
Yeah.
Another movie that was challenging and dealt with race, but I think unconsciously, was Mafu Cage. Have you seen this movie?
No.
So the Mafu Cage, it's based on a play. There's these two sisters. Their father was a, I don't know, anthropologist maybe. Mm. They had done work in Africa. They had lived in Africa.
Mm.
This one woman is clearly not herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she likes to keep these monkeys, which she calls Mafu. Why? I don't know. Some African thing going on. But their house is filled with all this African stuff. She's always dressing in African
stuff.
She's
a white lady.
She's a white lady. You might remember her as the Ghost of Christmas Present from Scrooged.
Right.
Yeah,
what's her name?
Yeah.
I know.
I forget
about.
Her name,
yeah.
But she was on Seinfeld for a while.
She's been
in a bunch of different movies. And I'll be honest with you, prior to this film, I had a crush on her back in the '80s.
Now you don't.
Hell no.
Whoa.
This movie is fucked up.
Holy shit!
It's really good. It's
yeah.
I mean, it's I think it's problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of it bother me. I think it's worth seeing. I think. I feel bad because it was another movie that I responded to poorly. I think both me and Susan were like, this movie kind of blows.
Yeah.
Because it's a little slower than I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a 12-hour marathon. A slow movie is not what you want.
Right. And it's weirdly brutal. Like, she gets these pet monkeys and then she is emotionally attached to them. And then she like gets mad at them and then she like kills them.
What?
Yeah. And that's kind of – and then
whoa.
It's just sort of her psychosis going. But like – so here's the thing. Clearly in the movie something traumatic happened to her.
Uh-huh.
But there's – I'm not saying the movie is literally racist, but like in comparison it to Coonskin, which is I think is the inflammatory movie, Mafu Cage is a movie where you could say, well, a white woman goes to Africa, gets a mental illness, which you could just say is Africa, and then she just can't be in civilized society because she's crazy.
And
I think in reality what probably happened is something horrible happened to her. And it was either a monkey or one of the people and where she was in Africa. But there's such a subtext of, I say racism, but it's really like more specifically colonialism. The fear of this primal other. And here she is now in the quote-unquote civilized world. She can't shake this primal whatever that's with her. And it's like, it's... Now, again, I'm reading into it a lot, but it's just funny that... thinking about it later, Coonskin is actually way less offensive at a certain level than Mafu Cage. On the other hand, if you can handle how slow it is, it's still worth seeing it. The performances to me are unbelievable. Just really good. It just gets a little tiresome. It's based on a play, and I think it's filmed. They try to like jazz it up a little bit. But there's a few like I say fucked up sequences. They're not like gross. When you say, oh, that's really messed up, people think like gore or whatever.
No.
But there's just a few moments that are so disturbing.
Just so uncomfortable.
That I, at the time, I was like, I think I kind of don't like this movie. And then since I've been like, I still don't want to see it again, but that was really interesting. I would recommend, if you're someone who appreciates movie for being intense, for being next level, I would recommend seeing it.
Right.
Other things that were highlight, the first movie of the fest was... Snake and Eagle Shadow, Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah,
and this is it's I forget who directed it. It's a pretty well known martial arts director.
Brothers kind of thing. Or?
I don't think it was. But what's interesting about it is it's very much that classic
that look
style versus style.
Yeah,
but it's Jackie Chan at this point still though, even though he isn't writing and directing, has evolved enough that it's a comedy. Like when people are not fighting to the death, Jackie Chan is doing silly things.
That's awesome.
And it works really... And it, you could see future of his stuff, which most of his stuff... I mean, if you take out Drunken Master, a lot of his movies, at least that I'm familiar with, are the more modern stuff.
Yeah.
And this he also, in his martial arts, he's not interested in style. A lot of his martial arts is really just like dancing. It's like Buster Keaton shit.
This
is a style movie. I mean, he's learning snake style.
Right.
He did that other fighting, one,
Snake and Crane, that was right?
Yeah. He's fighting Eagle's Claw. He develops a style he calls Cat's Paw, which is redunculous because every time he does it, they play like a cat sound. It's really, really, it's, you know,
so good.
Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Sorry. Way to ruin it, you. Liam, I almost called you Evo. Sorry.
But yeah, so that was cool. And then another highlight for me was, let's see, what was next? Oh, then there was a Women in Prison movie. Well, so there's a Western face-to-face, that's fine, Women in Prison movie called Bamboo Dollhouse, which was a Shaw Brothers produced, but only one of the Shaw Brothers. It was one Shaw produced.
No shit. So wait, was it, who was in it? Was it Asian women and Filipinos?
There were white women. It was so the setting of it was a Japanese internment camp in Hong Kong.
Holy shit.
And it's like, you think Women in Prison, like, if you've seen like Big Dollhouse.
Yeah.
Which that's we saw, fun, silly movie.
Yeah. We saw that together at Eastern State Penitentiary.
That was awesome. Secret Cinema.
That was ridiculous.
Sup, Secret Cinema.
Yeah, holla.
I should have asked them to help promote. I didn't even ask him.
They're so cool. Secret Cinema is so cool.
Secret Cinema is cool. Help promote us. Okay, cool. No. But yeah, we did like that event. I mean, seeing a Women in Prison movie in a prison is pretty neat.
Yeah, it's pretty
And it was 16mm. It wasn't like he set up a digital projector or something.
No. Yeah. He also made the claim that they're the only true film society in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's probably not true.
It's so funny though.
It is true. Anyways, point being, it's not like that. It's not fun. It's not funny.
No.
I
couldn't imagine.
In fact, what's so weird is their only comedic parts of the movie are sex scenes.
Oh god.
Where these women are being forced to have sex.
Oh no.
Right, but the comedic ones are the ones where the women aren't being forced, like they actually are into it and they make it into a joke. And I'm like, not funny, Shaw. Like, jeez, what the fuck? So that being said, it wasn't bad. It was actually pretty good. It's just like the comedic notes are so out of place. I wish they were not in the movie. I wish the whole thing was just brutal, a brutal, cruel picture. Then that would work for me actually better.
Yeah.
So
I can't imagine like a women in prison movie that isn't like stupid. You know what I mean? Like, that's just straight up, like, this is reality right here. And, like...
It was harsh.
I would not want to watch that. That sounds horrible.
It was not... And it was not bad. Well, and then there was a trailer reel called The Best of Sex and Violence with both John and David Carradine in it.
Whoa!
Mostly hosted by John Carradine.
Wow.
And And it was just great. It was a perfect choice for that moment in the fest too, because I needed to like go get food and hit up the bathroom. Mm. So you're missing trailers, sure, but you're not like missing plot points. So like you can leave, come back in. There's going to be some awesome trailers. Some
wacky stuff going leave. On. Anyway.
Yeah. And the trailers, literally, it was like horror movie trailers, sexploitation trailers. It would just go back and forth.
Yeah,
sex and violence. It was from like the and it was from like the 80s. And it had not occurred to me that even in the 80s they were starting to idealize the trailers of the past. Because here's this thing from like 83, maybe 84.
And they're idealizing 82. Like 70s.
Yeah, and they're like, look at this crazy thing from the 60s and 70s. Mm. And I'm like, oh.
Dude, like that stuff. Because even during regular Exhumed.
They do trailers.
And
yeah,
stuff.
They didn't do trailers like between the movies this time.
No?
Yeah, I love it. I love seeing the old trailers. I will say, I did not. A lot of times what I'll do with these things is that's the one time I'll like bust something out and like record the names of the movies so that I can check them out later.
Yeah.
I did not do that this time, only because I was sort of in and out, you know, and a lot of the movies were so ridiculous. I just thought I'm not going to even worry about it. Because here's the thing. I love the trailer thing, but I am very susceptible to trailers.
Yeah.
So I've had a few times where like I saw a great example. We talked about it, I think, on the show already, but I went to that double feature of Amok and the Coed Murders. Amok is just not as good as the trailer makes it seem. It's not terrible. It's just not as good as the trailer makes it seem. So
there's so many movies like that. Like the trailer for Torso. Do you remember that one? It was like Torso.
Yeah.
Watch the movie and you're like, yeah, okay, let's watch that trailer again. It's one of those.
I mean, I hate to I'm not trying to like poop on the movies, but it is true. Like, so like I'll watch a trailer thing, but it has been positive. Like, I really like that movie. Have you ever seen the movie Golden Needles?
No.
It's a
I feel like I might have.
It's like a kung fu movie, but it's got that guy. The guy was in Mitchell.
Remember Mitchell? Wait, is it the one where the dude's an acupuncturist?
Well, yeah. If you get the needles and you do them right, then you live forever. Yeah. Or you die or something.
He uses them in his hair. He's got them in his hair. He's pulling around poking people and stuff, and they start laughing when he puts them in places. And like,
crying. Oh, I don't know, actually.
There was a kung fu movie that I saw where the main protagonist was an acupuncturist.
Oh, no. I think this movie is, it's not really a, it's like a quote-unquote kung fu movie. It's really like an exploitation-y, like Asian act. Because like the main dude is that, I don't know if you ever saw that movie Mitchell. It was on Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's like the drunken detective movie.
I remember it vaguely.
He's just like a ruddy white guy. So this is like a movie where he's in China trying to figure out what's going on with these golden needles. And then there's all these people doing karate and kung fu and martial arts or whatever. Yeah. And he's just like, oh, these guys are crazy. And trying to like punch him and stuff, you know. It's actually pretty good. I mean, I'm making fun of it, but I liked it. It was on Netflix and I was like, golden needles? Sweet. Whoa. Yeah. And just watched it.
That's
you know?
Awesome.
So that was, in other words, X-Fest was fun. I have to admit, and I'll put this in my review too, I didn't stick around for the last movie. It was a movie called Eager Beavers.
Oh.
It's basically a horror sexploitation, like sex comedy almost. It's like sexy waitresses who are just randomly naked, and then this dude like kills them, you know? And the opening death scene, though very well done, was so rapey.
So just but it misogynistic.
Wasn't, but it wasn't a rape scene. It was like, I think that's the point of the movie, is that this guy is getting sexual pleasure from killing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they film it, is like he's chasing her down, but then he just stabs her. Mm. So like, you could say that a lot of slasher movies are sort of sexualized, but this was like very much so. And then he like takes pictures of her. Well, it was just a long day. And I was already thinking about heading out. I had to be up early the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that opening scene was just like so brutal in the first like 10 minutes of the movie, I was just like, I think I'm just going to go home. I'm just not as into this.
You know what? The nature inherently of exploitation movies. When I hear exploitation movie, oh, it's an exploitation flick. I just naturally think it's going to be fucked up and I don't want to see it.
You're not into exploitation?
No, I don't think that I am, because of its inherent misogyny, inherent rapiness. You know what I mean? Like, that shit is fucked up, man. And, like, I don't want to have to see that ever.
Right.
There's never a situation. Blaxploitation to me is different. Like, if you watch...
See, I think you're I personally think, not to be judgy, that you're expanding it a little too broad genre-wise.
Well...
Because I think exploitation films are just films that, genre films that take this one thing and like push it. You know what I mean? So technically, certain Westerns are exploitation movies. Kung Fu movies are exploitation movies. So
that's your definition of what an exploitation film is.
Yeah, it's a movie the point of it is that rather than sticking to the genre, it exaggerates a genre to that. That's sort of the point. You know what I mean? So, like, you could have a sexy movie that's not a sexploitation movie. Sexploitation movie, it's like, that's the whole point. It's, like, unnecessary. So the way that the rapiness tends to come in with these movies are, like, the gritty crime exploitation movie. There's often some sort of misogynistic whatever. Or the specifically rape revenge genre, which is, like,
I spit on your grave.
Oh, yeah. And that, to me, is, like, so hit or miss. Like, I hate I Spit on Your Grave, which we're probably alienating part of our audience right now
because they love that movie. I can't watch that shit. I can't watch that. What was the other one that they did the remake of? The Last House on the Left, was it? Or
so I like Last House on the Left, and I don't like I Spit on Your Grave.
I can't watch either of them.
And like for me, it's not that I like Last House on the Left. I just think it is really well done.
Really?
Yeah, I really think it's good.
Wow.
And that's the thing is like I'm not willing to write off the rape revenge movie completely, but I do think it is such a dangerous genre because it's mostly done poorly that like if it was literally like no one's ever going to make one of these movies again, that's fine. There's enough of them. Most of them are bad.
Yeah.
So I don't really care.
I have a hard time. I don't know if you know this about me. There are two things thematically that I have a hard time dealing with when it comes to movies. One is the whole rape issue and misogyny in general. I can't. It makes me uncomfortable.
Right.
It makes me feel sick. Like, I don't want to watch that stuff. I'm not going to pay someone to entertain me this way.
Right.
Second thing is stories about marital infidelity. I can't watch movies where...
Really?
Like, yeah, I can't watch movies where, like, wives cheat on husbands and husbands cheat on wives. Like, that shit fucks me up. Like, not that... I mean, you know, I just conceptually, like... To have that as,
but
like...
But that seems like such a theme in so many movies.
I know. Trust me, it's a bummer. But, I mean, like, even books and stuff. Like, if you read Skinny Legs and All by Tom Robbins, one of my favorite authors, right?
Yeah.
We're just at the very end, the whole infidelity thing kind of sneaks in there, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't even finish, like, the last 20 pages of it because of
it.
Like,
I didn't realize that.
To the point where I can't... It's just... It's a thing that I don't want to know anything about. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't want to know anything about that stuff at all. And then, I've seen movies. I think the one movie for that really fucked me up was, I know it's going to sound crazy, but, like, Gaspar Noé is Irreversible. That movie is so brutal, and the rape scene in that movie is so horrible. Like, straight up fucking horrible. Like, I could never, ever watch a movie where that is even a part of it ever again. I can't watch it. I just can't. Because it's just... It's so offensive to humanity to me. Like, it's so brutal.
Well, see, for me, it's really how it's done. Like, the thing with I Spit on Your Grave, for me, and a lot of people like it, so I feel bad trash-talking it. But for me, it just doesn't work. Like, the way that they film it doesn't, to me, seem to sort of balance out. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, I think there's a difference between rape revenge movies and movies with rape in
them.
You know, and obviously as a man, you know, who cares what I think to a large extent. But just personally, if a movie has rape in it and it's filmed in such a way that that's what it's about is how horrible it is, that's one thing. And I think I can be okay with that depending on how it's done. Now, it might be you are depicting it negatively. You want us to know how horrifying it is. But in doing so, it's, like, hard to watch.
Yeah.
Part of me wants to force myself to deal with that anyway because I should know. Mm-hmm. I should know how bad it is. But it's also art, so you also have to deal with yourself and say, well, at what point do we have to just admit that the event of it, the thing that occurs in any violence, any rape, you can't really represent in art very well anyway. So to some extent, you're always failing. It's beyond what you can depict. It's beyond what we can really know anything about. Mm-hmm. So I want to both acknowledge that limitation, but also not avoid uncomfortable things. Mm. But I do think in the name of showing uncomfortable things, some things cross the line into exploitation as a sense of like I'm going to use this terrible thing as a way to like titillate you. So like
it's like the difference between the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and the Fincher remake. I never saw the Fincher remake because I mean I saw Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and I was like that's intense. I don't ever want to see that again. It was a good movie, I'm not gonna lie.
Right.
It was a good story, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't watch the other two in the trilogy because of that movie.
Yeah,
and I can't.
I read the books. I saw the original European movies. Yeah. I actually didn't think they were very good.
No,
I thought the Fincher movie was great. Except for the part that I really do think that rape scene is problematic for me. Mm-hmm. And I've had this discussion with people. A lot of people disagree with me. I just think the way he filmed it was towing the line, in the sense of, like, not that I think he's trying to portray rape positively. I'm not mm-hmm. accusing him of anything like that. I'm just saying it's hard to be artistic. Like, mm-hmm. at that point, you should just film it ineptly. So it is just like, this is brutally what is happening right now.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like by adding in your own artistic flair, you yeah. unintentionally are sort of jazzing it up, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And that's like not what you want.
Not cool.
No.
Not cool.
So this is, I mean, this was not what we were planning to discuss today. So this is a difficult topic in yeah. some ways, and it's worth figuring out. But I think for me, this is a difficult, you know, how do you depict rape? And yeah. I think there's something... you can do a rape revenge movie that's like very visceral
mm-hmm.
and is not really about it's really about the revenge aspect of it, which mm-hmm. of course you could say that's not politically speaking that much better
yeah.
because, you know, retribution, you know, violence to meet violence is actually not that, you know, sort of liberating of an idea. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying as a experience in a film
mm-hmm.
and this is where I do have to say, like, you can talk about that sort of at a personal level. I don't think if you're someone who likes those kind of movies, I'm not going to make a judgment on you unless I know you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I might know you and know you're a fucking creep.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone's like, well, no, I like those movies. I like the way that they deal with this, whatever. I do think I want to avoid the idea that what you like in art is about necessarily who you are as a person. This is problematic for me from two directions. One, with music.
Mm-hmm.
If art work that way, then you would actually have radical people everywhere, because there's so much radical music about being mm-hmm. about something, and people aren't about anything, you know.
So they just like music.
Or in the other direction, I don't actually think, like, one of the things that we talk to people about, and you guys who aren't involved in music might not know this, there are sort of sneaky bands that have, like, you know, racist agendas.
Mm-hmm.
The issue for me with that music is not like if you hear a Screwdriver song, you're going to become racist because you mm-hmm. heard a Screwdriver song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy that shit because I don't want to give those motherfuckers my money.
Mm-hmm.
and I don't want to support a movement.
Mm-hmm.
But the art itself is inane. You know, I don't care. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, most of those bands are bad anyway, so it's not even an issue for
weird.
Me.
Weird. Like, if you in black metal in particular, yeah. Lord Wynn, actually, I had a discussion about Lord Wynn recently with my good friend Keegan about how, you know, the guy who makes Lord Wynn music, have you heard it?
No.
Lord Wind is the side project of the guy who does Graveland.
Oh, Graveland's racist.
Really,
right?
Racist. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. Lord Wind is instrumental.
Yeah.
And it's like instrumental music with the sounds of Vikings on ships. So it's creaking boats and ropes and shit.
Yeah.
It's atmospheric. It's epic. And before I knew that it was that guy, I loved it.
Yeah.
No words.
Yeah.
Completely instrumental.
Yeah.
But now that I know that that dude is, like, fucking fucked up, like, racist, doesn't like Filipinos, probably. I mean, can I listen to Lord Wynn still?
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely have friends who still listen to music that is sketchy.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not going to call them out on our podcast, but I know that they like that stuff, and they're like, hey, I'm an adult. And I can make adult decisions.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be affected because some idiot has an idiot idea. For me, with music, it's not that hard of a struggle because I actually don't like most of those bands.
Yeah.
So there's nothing there. But it's not the art that's the issue either. So, like, for example, let's move this over to the other thing with the Woody Allen situation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are mining his art to, like, see, like, well, isn't it clear that he's a fucking pedophile?
Yeah.
But, like, don't get me wrong, I think he probably did all the things he's accused of. I'm not okay. into defending not Woody Allen for 2 seconds.
Right.
But that doesn't make his movies bad per se.
Right.
Which doesn't mean you have to like Woody Allen movies. Lots of people have lots of good reasons not to like Woody Allen movies.
Mm-hmm.
But his actions in the world don't make his art bad. And if you did like his movies, mm-hmm. you're not all of a sudden suspect because you liked a Woody Allen movie.
You know, take the money and
run. Yeah, if you
well, I think that your previous contention is that, you know, the vote ultimately stands with your money.
Right.
So if, say, you know, regardless of what the outcome is and the truth behind the accusations and all that stuff, right, I'm never giving any money to Woody Allen anymore.
Never again.
I mean, I don't know if he's guilty and I don't know if he's innocent. I don't know. But I do know that regardless, I'm not going to buy in. I'm right. not paying into that.
If once he's dead, they put out a cheap box set of shit, I might buy that. Because I like some of his movies. I'm not going to pretend like I don't.
Right.
But, like, yeah, you're just making a decision about that guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to give that guy my money.
Yeah.
And, I think there's a lot of people. A lot of people who are as ideological as some of our friends are. I mean, I have friends who are, like, super ideological, you know, like, destroy the patriarchy. I'm never watching a music video ever again and stuff like that. And, like, I'm not going to shit on them. There's just as many people who are very ideological, I think, about not being ideological. Like, you should just see anything, and who cares about the politics involved? And being offended is a bad thing, and you should never be offended. I'm not that dude, but I am open to trying new things. Like, if a movie is controversial, I would still be willing to see it just to, like, know what it is that's so controversial about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, for a lot of people,
I think that's an intellectual approach to that kind of thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that.
But it sounds like your issue with the rape thing is not intellectual; it's emotional. Like it affects you in a way where you're not having fun. So why should you do it?
It affects me in a way that I don't want to spend my time watching that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't think that, and that'll keep me from going to X Fest. I've not gone to one X Fest yet because of it. Because I can't do it. I can't run that risk. I don't want to spend the money or the time doing that. Not that I'm taking away from anybody's, you know, whatever, who wants to see that stuff. That's fine. You know, anybody who has no issue with it. Cool,
right.
Whatever.
Right.
I'm not going. I'll go to the Planet of the Apes Fest.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's a good time. I didn't make it out, but I would. You know what I mean? And, like, typically I'll try and make it out to the 24-hour horror marathon, or any Zoom thing, really. But
yeah, I mean, they have a bunch of cool stuff coming up. This Friday, I mean, this isn't going to get up by Friday, but Friday, I'm trying to go to the Kaiju Fest. That's going to be Kaiju awesome. Palooza.
I actually have tickets to see Todd Barry at Underground Arts this Friday. Actually, it's pretty intense for me this week because tonight is Doug Benson at Helium, and then tomorrow is Todd Barry.
I forgot about Doug Benson. That's tonight.
Yeah, that's tonight, 10 o'clock. I'm gonna be tired tomorrow, but
this is probably not good radio for us talking about this. Granted. But I really wish I could go to that. Well, but so maybe I will, but we'll see. But just to wrap this sort of issue up, like if you are. I mean, I'm not suggesting that anyone's out there like, yo, I really dig on some rape movies. Like, that's not, you know, I hope that's not the case. Yeah. But I will 100% defend the if someone was saying, like, the whole genre's out. I think there are rape revenge movies that are well done. I just think inevitably you run the issue of filming it poorly, of sensationalizing something.
Scripting it incorrectly.
Or, like, sexualizing it in a way, like... I just, a lot of those movies just don't work for me. So when one does, I end up liking it a lot because I'm like, oh, it's really good the way they figure that out. Mm. But if someone wanted to, like, critique us and say, like, well, don't watch any of those movies, like, yeah, Josh is on your side. He's not interested at all.
I'm not doing it.
And, like, that's fine. I mean, the thing is that I think one of the things I'm avoiding in my politics, and just to put that out there, I think of myself as pretty left.
I'm sure everyone,
and I would even say left of what you would call liberalism, because I think liberalism sometimes is a little weak. It's a lot about, like, we're just free to do whatever, and, like, sometimes, like, maybe you shouldn't be free to do whatever. Like, justice for people who are poor means that I think, you know, things like tough taxes or rules about certain things, like, I'm okay with that. So I think I lean a little bit more towards left. I'm sure there's always someone to the left of me, but as I've talked about before, I also have, like, religious leanings. So, like, I'm just as sensitive to, like, if, like there are plenty of folks who would call same team, you know, like, we're churchy people, who would be like, well, you can't watch anything that's sexual or has any violence in it because that's going to, like, somehow corrupt you. And I disagree with that completely. You'll never hear me make any claim like that. But what is really interesting is how sometimes people feel the same way from the left. That, like,
you can't watch a Republican,
even just Republican, but, like, something that is
a right wing.
Or that there wouldn't be some of the greatest political and social thinkers, philosophical thinkers, suffered from various things that were not cool. And We tend to think that, like, now you could say, like, well, this idea they had, like, let's say you have a political philosopher and they have a concept of freedom. Mm-hmm. And then you notice that they also screwed all their PhD students.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, I think their concept of freedom is suspect mm-hmm. because clearly they didn't value women like they right. do think. But you could also make the argument that they're unrelated. Mm-hmm. Not that someone's social life is completely unrelated from their ideas. But you could still say, well, that he had this one concept, and this concept really works. Mm. And he didn't expand it, or she, for that matter, didn't expand it far enough. You know, they were limited in their thinking.
Mm.
But the fact that they were an asshole doesn't automatically make...
It doesn't moot their ideas.
Yeah, not to me, at least. And right. maybe I'm wrong, and feel free to challenge me with that. But that's how I feel about both ideas and art. Mm. And I feel like...
So you believe in the firm separation of the artist from the art?
Not completely, no, because I do think that, I'm not going to give an artist my money if their mm-hmm. life is so fucked up that I feel like I'm supporting
yeah.
fucked so up like shit.
That Sid Vicious-style heroin addiction.
Well, I don't know about that, because as much as I'm straight edge, I actually think, like, if you want to destroy yourself with... To me, this is what I don't get about straight edge people that are actually prohibitionists. Mm. Then you're basically just saying, like, you want the government to be your enforcer of the things you care about. As a straight edge person, I think most drugs should probably be legal.
Mm.
And then I would be part of a social movement to say, like, yeah, you could go get some heroin, but mm. guess what? You don't want to do that. It's bad.
Yeah.
And honestly, the people who are drinking themselves into a stupor and then looking down on drug users are, mm. like, the biggest fucking hypocrites in the world.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you. Like, for real. Like, as a straight edge dude, like... I would rather be around people smoking pot than people drinking.
Really?
Anytime. Yeah. I mean, no, we're wrong. On a purely social level, high people are so annoying. Like, people who are high are like, I just don't want them around me. But on, like, an actual safety level, drunk people fight. They, uh-huh. I actually have seen people who were high be able to perform physical tasks better than they were when they weren't high.
Right.
I just don't believe that anyone drives better when they're drunk. I don't yeah. believe, I know that they get in fights, you get belligerent. I just think your behavior is different. Now, you could say, well, once you get past pot, that we're into a weird realm with drugs. And I'm willing to discern that, you know?
Right.
But honestly, like, if you have safe heroin... And you can get it legally and without having to hurt people.
Right.
You're then just, I mean, granted, your life has probably amounted to nothing. You're just going to take heroin for the rest of your life, whatever. But I just don't want you to hurt me. Like, that is the one extent to which I guess I have some, like, libertarian leanings, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Is that, like, yo, man, do whatever, like, you want, just to you. Do your fucking thing. Now, mm-hmm. granted, sorry, if someone was like, well, I also need tax breaks so I can afford my heroin, then I'd be like, fuck you, I'm redistributing your wealth to the poor non-heroin users who need to, like, you know, get their life together and make something of themselves.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm no perfect when it comes to all these political, I'm sure someone's like, oh, Liam's an idiot, his ideas are so stupid. But anyways, we talked for a long time, yeah, right,
about
now.
Nothing almost, but it's cool, whatever, that's what we do.
We were my hope was that today, you know, it's May. We could talk a little bit about the films we're excited for this summer.
Well, real quick, when we talk about what we saw this week, did you see anything this week that you
liked?
Oh,
right. So I did X-Fest. The only other thing I saw that I wanted to endorse to people, the 2 cents this week, is a movie called The Punk Singer. You heard about this movie?
The one about the Bratmobile. Kathleen Hanna, is that her?
Yeah, Kathleen Hanna, who's in Bikini Kill and Letigre. So I knew Letigre from college. And
Wasn't she in Bratmobile too, or no? Was that not
I
her?
Don't think so.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
Maybe she was. I thought in the documentary, other people, that Bikini Kill went on tour with Bratmobile, mm-hmm. and Bratmobile yeah. helped start the whole Riot Girl thing. So I'm not that familiar with Riot Girl stuff. I know Letigre because the person who suggested the movie was our staff writer, Rhea St. Julian. Mm. She went to college with me. Her and her husband went to college with me. And her friends would play Letigre all the time. So yeah. I'm familiar with Letigre.
Do you like Letigre?
It's pretty good, yeah. I like it. I'm not like a huge fan or anything. After watching a documentary, I think I would like Bikini Kill, actually. I want to go back and get some Bikini Kill.
Do you listen to, like, any other Riot Girl stuff?
Or? No, that's not. Here's the thing. I was talking to someone about this. Riot Girl, based upon this movie, is definitely like a punk thing. Like,
yeah.
It comes from, like, the punk movement and the punk culture. I didn't see it that way at the time. When I was a youth, grunge was hitting big.
Yeah.
So when I started listening to punk, I was making a choice away from grunge. Mm-hmm. Now, post all that, people can go back and say, well, I don't know, Nirvana sort of had punk leanings. You know, Mudhoney, maybe, yeah. Soundgarden were like more metal-y, underground hardcore even. So people can make those claims, and that's fine, you know. But at the moment, when I was in that moment, I was making a decision. I was making a decision for legitimate punk. I mean, not only had grunge hit, by the time I started listening to punk, all those big popular pop punk bands were starting to get
the
big.
The Green Days and the Blink-182s.
Oh, yeah.
And
so, like, I was making a decision away from popular music.
Towards a more...
towards obscure music. And so a band like Bikini Kill seemed to me to toe the line. Sure, they were not mainstream. They never made a lot of money. No. They were never huge.
No.
But they were playing your Lollapaloozas. They were playing those sort of fests. And I was like, I never went to Lollapalooza because Lollapalooza was for posers. Like 100%. And like, there are people listening to this who are probably just like shocked at that. They just bit their tongue. Like,
I will say
what?
That I went to a couple Lollapaloozas with Dave Adoff. And the first one that I went to was with Alice in Chains and Fishbone and Dinosaur Jr. And bands that, you know, aren't exactly punk rock or whatever, but they were fucking awesome. And I listen to them still to this day.
Well, they have their roots. I mean, both Dinosaur Jr. and Fishbone come from our scene. And at the time, it was hard to see that. But that is true. I think retrospectively, you can say that. But in the moment, the fact that Bikini Kill opened that Fugazi show was a bummer to me.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, Fugazi's so good and Bikini Kill's fine, whatever. Now, like, and so anyways, I saw this documentary, The Punk Singer. It's on Netflix. We did it for 2 cents. It was really good. I mean, I will say it toes the line a little bit between less of a documentary and more of a tribute. It's very much like there's no, like, alternative voices about it's everyone loves, you know, Hannah and loves Kathleen Hannah and loves Bikini Kill, and there's no one in it that's like, actually this was kind of dumb, you know, which, but that's fine. It doesn't need, since the point of the movie is people, you know, women trying to be affirmed, and the way that just by being who she was getting attacked. It doesn't make any sense to have a negative voice, I think, in the documentary. So,
because the negative voice is everywhere else.
There were already so many negative voices. Why do you need that in this documentary? So I'm not critiquing the documentary in that sense, but it was, if someone's like really into documentaries, I don't know if that's the best one. It's not, it doesn't shine of its own merit. It shines because Kathleen Hanna is awesome. Like, that's what makes the documentary amazing, is because the story it tells is amazing. But that's fine. I'd prefer a documentarian who knows that and is like, I'm just gonna get out of the way and let the story tell itself and not worry about it. So I thought it was really good, and it made me seriously want to go buy some Bikini Kill albums.
There you go. You should. You should check out bands like Team Dresch. Have you listened to Team Dresch at all?
So I saw Team Dresch back
then.
They're
awesome.
And I thought they were pretty good, but I didn't really get that into it.
They're pretty cool. See, it's funny. As far as Riot Girl goes, for me, like, I knew about all that stuff, like Huggy Bear and all those other bands. But for me, I loved, like, Coleman, Spitboy, these bands from mostly California that were female-fronted or all-female that were fucking powerful and brutal. Like, it wasn't an essence of... a different kind of energy because of gender, you know, perspectives or anything. It was more so just, this shit is fucking powerful. Like, have you ever listened to Coleman?
No, never.
They did a split with this band, Three Studies for a Crucifixion.
Okay.
That lady sounds like the singer from Monster X. Like, it's fucking unbelievable rage coming through the speakers.
Well, like, and I will say that, like, I get, there's a whole section of The Punk Singer about how part of the Girls to the Front thing was because of all the aggressive men. You know, the scene was so chaotic and so aggressive. Well, A, it's still chaotic and aggressive. It actually hasn't changed that much. But B, as one of those aggressive males, to me, the issue was less we're being so aggressive that women can't be at the show, and more acknowledging the fact that women could also be aggressive, and our aggressive was a respectful aggressive. And that's sort of the thing. Bikini Kill was playing shows where there was moshing, but there was like the push pit moshing, and then there was like hardcore dancing, and which no one calls it anymore. Like, nowadays, people say moshing, and they also mean what we do at hardcore shows. What we do is secret. But
it's,
you know,
not just girls' fun.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the thing. It's not, it is not just boys' fun anymore. Like, there's still discussions about it, you know, and I get it. It's a physically imposing activity. But I think that the idea that it's only for boys is long since gone.
Yeah.
I think you still have your occasional misogynist boy who's like, where are the girls in the pit? Yeah. But I think for the most part, that's over. And with the recent sort of reappropriation of stage diving, is like, the more kids are into stage diving than into, like, moshing hard.
Yeah.
That, like, there's plenty of room for ladies to jump off the stage. Like, that's not even a physically imposing. You could be the littlest young woman. You could be the smallest. But my hope is that a hardcore pit, uh-huh. the reason it's different than a push pit, is that though it might feel chaotic, if a young, small girl or dude, like, if a little dude goes out there and starts swinging,
yeah.
the kind of guy that was like, I'm going to knock that guy out of my way and fuck that dude, that's a guy I don't like.
Yeah.
Some kid, I know this kid's swinging his hardest, but he could hit me and it's not going to hurt, and mm-hmm. I could just get in his way if I wanted to. Guess what? I'm still getting out of his way because I want that kid to have fun. And maybe I'm a wuss for that. Maybe I'm like the rare dude at the hardcore show that's like, but I'm like, yeah, pity quality, man. A young woman, a young dude, whoever wants to get out there and they don't scare me, I'm not going to be like, I'm a mosh this dude out. Like, that's yeah. not who I am, and I don't right. want that at my show. Now, of course, you do have to take into account the kind of show you're at, too.
Yeah.
If 100 Demons is playing, yeah. All Out War is playing, you know the it's biggest, scariest intense, guys yeah. are going to be raging out. So try to stay out of their way. But I know plenty of young women who All Out War is their favorite fucking band. Yeah. And they know to not get hit. They know to try to be safe. But they will rage. I mean, I've been hit by some of these young ladies, and it hurts.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that was one part of the movie I guess I didn't quite agree with. But knowing at the time what was going on, which was more of the chaotic push pit, we're just going to hurt everybody thing.
Yeah.
I could see the ladies being like, no, like, get that shit out of here. Or at least move it to the back so I can just watch the show.
Yeah.
That kind of clicks, you know. Right.
I also want to give a big, warm-hearted shout-out to my girl Grace Kim.
Yeah, she's a moosher.
Ace Mosh. She is one of the best people. If you see her in the pit, it's awesome. It's the funniest thing and the coolest thing, and well, I love her very much.
Well, and a big theme of the movie was being able to listen. Like, here's the thing. Like, I am never going to be the perfect anti-patriarch dude. I'm just a dude. I really respect women a lot, but I'm sure there's things I say that are stupid. I'm sure I make mistakes like any other dude.
Uh-huh.
So, like, what I liked about the movie is that there was a big focus on listening. That, like, just the fact that Kathleen, Hannah, and these other Riot Girls were like, we deserve a voice, that was threatening in and of itself.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, I have no problem with that. You want to read your spoken word about whatever? Let's do it. Like, I'm about that. And you can even tell me why I'm fucked up, and I'm okay with that. And I think that's I hope I'm not mansplaining, you know, like, oh, I'm so great because I listen. But I do think, like, that's the least – what's frustrating to me is that's the least you could do. It's hard. Yeah. It can be hard. Like, you know, I actually have a certain amount of patience. You know, the thing I deal with a lot of times is race. And I do have a certain amount of patience with white people. But I get impatient with white people when they won't even listen.
Yeah.
That's the least fucking thing you can do. Jesus. Just true. Listen. So if, you yeah. know, if there's a neo Riot Girl movement and they want me to listen to what they have to say about rape culture, I'm all about listening. Like, it's the least fucking thing yeah. I could do.
It's true.
And
it's
true. Why get mad about it? I mean, this woman received so many death threats because she was in a band and made a zine. Like, what the fuck?
Like, dude, come on.
She was sleeping on couches. It's not like she was making money. Bikini Kill wasn't a cash in.
Definitely not. Definitely not. So, but you endorse this movie. Punk yeah. Sang. All right. I haven't seen it yet. I will hopefully try and see it.
Have you seen anything you want to endorse to our audience?
I do. Oh, yeah. Just on the tails of that. Let's bring back the Philadelphia Radical Cheers. That's the other thing. But
yes.
That would be hilarious. I love that.
Radical
shit.
Cheerleaders.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But what I saw this week was I saw two movies I want to talk about.
Okay.
First one was Blue Ruin. Did you see this goddamn movie, Blue Ruin? At all?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it yet.
Do you know what it's about?
Did you see it in the theaters?
No, I bought it on demand. I spent money on it.
Yeah, so here's the thing. It was in theaters, but it's been playing at the Roxy.
Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been at the Roxy for a little while. And we have a thing with the Roxy.
Yeah, beef.
Yeah. It's not really beef
it's
with
beef.
The Roxy. It's beef with the Film Society.
Who runs the Roxy.
And then the Roxy itself is just not great. So it's like, I don't want to give the Film Society my money, per se. I'm not sure I want to. Let's put it that way. And I don't love the theater itself. It's just not. I mean, I think the people who run it are great. Like, they seem really nice. I've been there twice. They seem really cool. But both times I went, the one time I actually spent my money to go, it just felt like it wasn't worth the money.
Yeah.
So I haven't gone. But I know Blue Ruin played at Fantastic Fest, and I've heard it's amazing.
It is so good. So the story is about this dude who's like, you meet this guy, he's like a drifter kind of dude, he's sleeping in a car, he's got a big beard, he's breaking into houses to take a bath and all this other stuff. And this nice police officer lady comes up to him, and you find out that his parents, who were murdered by this dude,
yeah,
the dude is getting out of jail. She's like, I don't know if you know or not, but he's getting out of jail. So yeah. I just figured you should want to know.
Yeah.
And then it turns into this like revenge movie where, oh my God, it was so well done. And there's so many scenes in it that are, that could have been stupid.
Yeah.
Like they could have been dumb and just not done well, but they hit every note accurately.
Wow.
To the point where like, by the time you get to the end of the movie, it reminded me of that, of the movie Princess. Did you see that movie? Princess?
No.
It's a old, it was an animated movie about this guy who's a priest. His sister was like a porn star and she dies. And he finds out that she had like a 10-year-old daughter that he then takes in to take care of her. And then as the movie goes along, he writes to the company that made the pornography that his sister was in and asks them to stop producing it.
Yeah.
And then it starts this weird war between him and them with the daughter in between, you know what I mean?
Wow, yeah.
But it's like, these movies are like, conceptually, like, they're very revenge, whatever. But they're also tragic. Like, there's no way they can end well.
Right.
And that's what reminded me of that movie. This movie is so awesome. I'm not going to give away the ending or anything like that. I will say it's a sad movie. But it's so good. It's so well done.
I really want to see it. Yeah. And maybe I'll come over and watch it here with you that you bought it. Because like I said, I was really bummed it didn't get a wider release. It was only at the Roxy.
It's so good. It's so fucking good. Like,
I need to see it.
It also reminded me of that movie, The Battery. Did you see that one?
No.
That's a weird... We saw it on Vudu. It was a streaming movie on Vudu. And it's a zombie movie between two dudes. But it's so well done. Like, it takes place... You don't really... You see zombies in it, but not that much. And it's them trying to survive in this world. And it's just the two of them. So, like, they're trying to, like, hang on to each other and make sure everything's good for each other. But then, like, there's these zombies running around. And it's crazy, but it's really well done. Real minimal kind of movie. Like, and I love that. I love an approach to, like the way Locke was done. Did we talk about Locke? I don't know. Locke was the new Tom Hardy movie that's supposed to come out.
So you said you were going to see it, but you didn't tell me anything about it.
It is a 2-hour movie of him driving for 2 hours. Wow. The entire action of the movie takes place between him and his Bluetooth cell phone. It's him driving, literally driving in a car for 2 hours, talking to people on the phone. On its face, kind of a horrific story. Like, I'm not going to watch a guy drive for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But when you get into it, it's so gripping, and you get so wrapped into the stories that he's navigating through as he travels to London.
Yeah.
That it's like that movie Buried, like one actor, one scene, that's it. And it's engrossing. It's so good. But that's not the other movie I want to talk about. I want to talk about Blue Ruin, and then I saw the new Ty West movie, The Sacrament.
Oh, I saw that a while ago. I saw it. They did it in the theater. Josh Goldblum did like a one night of it with Ty West there.
What did you think?
I liked it. I think I wasn't blown away by it, but I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting to see because I was just about, at the time I was sitting in on this PhD course, we were just about to start talking about the Jonestown Massacre.
Really?
So it sort of lined up with that.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really well done. I think it's,
I thought it was interesting how they juxtaposed that with, like, a Vice reporter crew.
Right.
I thought that was, like, a pretty interesting update. And, like, you know, I thought that it was really well shot. Did you think it was well shot?
I thought it looked really good.
Yeah,
for a movie that was, like, those are all handheld DV cameras, right?
It was all very first person. Everything I hate. I hate first person shooters. I hate them. Yeah. I hate them so much. I hate watching movies with their first person perspective. And it's a camera, whatever. Cloverfield. I almost threw up, like, 3 times when I saw it.
Yeah.
Terrible. I hate that shit. But then this movie comes along and it already has my misgivings because of that. And it comes back and surprises the hell out of me. Like, I thought it was really, really awesome. It was very tense.
Yeah.
It was so tense in parts that I was just like, what the fuck, man?
Well,
like,
and the acting was next level. The guy who plays the leader, whatever it is.
He was great.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah, he was really, really good.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the people there, when we were watching it, they had the Q&A with Ty West afterwards. He said that scene, the big interview scene with the whole people there, that was like, that was the first scene any of those extras ever did. They had no idea what it was, but it's just that dude was able to like get them riled up. Like he didn't give them any instructions. They just filmed that shit.
Wow.
That's amazing. I mean, I just think the whole thing is kind of an amazing accomplishment. I think as a film, it might be hard for some people because it's like
cults.
Yeah, well, not even just that, but like it's so tense and it's like so depressing, and there's not really a comfortable resolution. There's no way for that to go anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, if you know the history of Jonestown, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what the movie's about and how it's going to go and what it's going to be and whatever. But it's still, I thought it was still worth it. I thought it was great. It just wasn't, it just wasn't something that like afterwards I was like, oh my God, I got to see that again.
Yeah, it
was
but it was really, really good. I thought it was really, really entertaining. I mean, like it was very thought provoking too. And just, I don't know, just concepts of togetherness and like the entity and all that stuff. It's really, I thought it was really interesting.
Well, he said it was really important to him that while it still be, you know, in some ways like a horrifying kind of movie, you know, mm-hmm. like it's not a pleasant topic. It was really important to him that he do it in such a way that the people who are at the camp are sympathetic.
Yeah.
Because people act like the Jonestown thing was just crazy. Why would anyone do that? Why would anyone do that? But as you read about it, it becomes more and more clear that these people weren't crazy.
No.
That they did something crazy, but that they weren't crazy, which is sort of a theme that we have a lot. Is this assumption that only the craziest or the weirdest or the most evil do bad things?
It's not true.
Or make bad decisions, and that's just not how it works.
Yeah, it's true. Absolutely.
Cool. So,
so those two movies I endorse highly.
Blue Ruin
and The Sacrament.
Yeah. So on Netflix, check out The Punk Singer. Blue Ruin, VOD, or if it's playing in a theater near you, definitely go see it in the theater. And The Sacrament, I think, is VOD right now. I don't think it's in theaters, though.
Right? I don't think it is.
I think it had a very limited release. Yeah.
But Ty West, I think, is one of the directors to watch. He has proven
himself
to be...
He is very much a divisive figure.
Yeah, you think so?
A lot of people told me they hate his movies.
Hate? Hate House of the Devil?
Hate House of the Devil. Hate The Innkeepers. Oh, hate the other one I haven't seen.
I haven't seen the other one.
And VA, I don't remember. Well, it's IMDb, but I don't remember what it is. But and I think, you know, he participated in VHS.
I like his VHS thing. You didn't
see? I think some people don't like it. I didn't like the first VHS as much as the second one.
The second one was definitely better, but his scene in the first one, his vignette in the first one was really good.
I thought it was good. I thought VHS as a whole was a little disappointing, but I think that's only because. I let myself get affected by the hype.
Yeah,
so many people were just like, "It's so good! Oh my God, you have to see VHS. Have you seen VHS?" And it's like, "Oh yeah, I'll check it out. Oh, it's all right."
Did he do one for ABC's of Death too? I think he did.
He did do an ABC's of Death.
Yeah,
I didn't see ABC's of Death.
You didn't see that? That was good. That was fine. I mean, it wasn't the best horror movie, but it was fine.
Okay,
it was a fun time. So
it just sounded too corny to me. It just sounded like a gimmick.
It's not. It's not like not gimmicky.
Yeah,
but it's good. It's it's a fun watch if you like vignette horror movies, which I happen to enjoy.
So, well, we've already been going for a little over an hour, so I think we'll wrap up. All we were going to talk about as our topic today was summer movie stuff, like what's coming out. Obviously, Godzilla comes out next week.
Oh my God!
And we're so excited about that,
dude.
A lot of the other summer movies, I mean, I hear horrible things about Spider-Man.
Yeah, most of the horror, the Spider-Man reviews I've seen were really
check out on synapse.co. Victor Pryor wrote a thing about Spider-Man that I think really sort of takes it apart, and so check that out. As far as other summer movies coming out, I'm actually kind of curious about The Fault in Our Stars.
I didn't hear anything about
it.
It's, who's doing that?
What is her name? The young woman who's in Divergent.
That lady.
She's in this movie. It's like a teen novel, but it's like a teen novel about cancer. So Susan, my wife, read it, cried through most of it, said it was amazing.
Yeah.
That doesn't make the movie good. But knowing that that book is so good, and I like her as an actress, I didn't see Divergent because I don't care about that shit.
Yeah,
but the other things that she's done I've liked. So, I'll probably see that. And then, you know, there's obviously the big like eight movies, and you know, there's the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which looks
I'm excited about that. I like the first one. I thought it was fun, you know.
I want to be excited for X-Men and I'm not.
No. Oh, you know what else I should mention too that I saw this week?
What?
I saw Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Broadway.
Oh, how was that?
Neil Patrick Harris in the role of Hedwig.
Yeah.
It was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I already love that movie. I love the play. I love Jonathan Cameron Mitchell. So watching Neil Patrick Harris do the role of Hedwig was intense. Me and Melania were so pumped. Like, it's funny, though, because we saw it in the Belasco Theater. Did I tell you about the Belasco Theater?
No.
That's where, I believe that was where John Barrymore did his last performance before he stopped. And it was where Brando played did Streetcar Named Desire there for the first time.
Yeah.
So it was pretty awesome being in that theater. Yeah. There was a scene where Neil Patrick Harris licked the floor while he was talking about that, which was intense. But it was a great, 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 great play. If you have a chance to see it, I suggest it too.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
So we're endorsing all those things. Also, upcoming stuff that we're excited about. Kaiju Palooza probably already happened by the time you're hearing this, so sorry.
Well, you never know.
If we get this up by Friday, you should go to the Kaiju Palooza. Exhumed also has, coming up soon, a John Carpenter double feature.
Oh, yes. Starman and Escape from New York. Oh, my God.
And then psych. At X-Fest, they announced two other things. One is, I think it's August 2nd. There's going to be a unreleased film fest. So Harry of Exhumed just acquired like 250 some prints from somewhere. And in the prints, he found a number of films that were never released home video, and at least one that was never released in theaters. It's just a cut of something that was never put out there. So they're going to do a fest. I don't know if they're going to announce any of the titles. They might not. Where it's like all movies that have never been released, at least on home video. So that'll be interesting. And then they also announced another double feature that'll be Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, and Dune.
Oh, yes. I love both of those. That's good.
I am very ambivalent on Dune. Like, I love it, and I hate it. So
yeah, I love Dune.
I think I want to see it, though. They'll both be on film, so that's cool. Nice. So,
it's going to be a good time.
And then, go to philly-shows.com for upcoming shows. I have a show coming up on May 15th that I put together, but we're having some venue issues, so hoping May 15th, Cult Leader, Yautjua, Old Wounds, Bardis, and Limits. So nice. Keep an eye out on, I'll also put it up on the Cinepunks Facebook.
Yeah, and then I'm also playing May 14th, the day before, at Creep Records now with Podactor and Not Half Bad.
Yeah.
So that's just me by myself, though. So
support Josh. Check that out.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much.
As we said, sometimes we don't stay on topic.
Hey, man.
So that's how it
it's
is.
It's all good.
Next week,
we're going to talk to Jay Shevchuk.
We're
also talking about watching, we're going to discuss the movies of Jan Svankmajer.
Alice.
Yes. Get a chance to watch that if you haven't.
Yeah. So. If you, we'll put that out there now. Watch Alice.
Yeah,
at least.
Alice.
At least Jan Alice. We might watch some other ones too, but we're going to be talking about Alice. Check it out if you haven't seen it. And then, maybe you can feel a little bit more part of the conversation.
There you go.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening to Cinepunks.
Bye.
Bye.